Tesla builds millions of robots every year. They're called cars.
Tesla has gone from like being a, it's just an afterthought for most people. And then they're on the cusp of being like, yo, check out this car that starts at 30 grand or less that you don't even have to pay attention.
The fact that people won't have to drive anymore in 5 years if they don't want to. And they can do it at a cheaper than the Uber or the Lyft cost, right? With no driver in there.
AI is legit. AI is very, very legit.
Elon actually said this actually a few weeks ago. By next year, AI will be able to do pretty much anything a human can do.
We're going to have a fork in humanity. We're going to have the people that want to live in the subjective world, and we have people that are going to want to live in the objective world.
How about your big steering wheel debate?
We can, I mean, the steering wheel debate, I've ran into. So you know what's crazy? Every time this thing comes up and I've been talking to it, it's like I didn't realize how big of a deal it was
I know, it's
until
so weird.
I checked my like my replies and my DMs and my comments and stuff, because I was really just like, I'm like, this is obviously going to happen. And then the Tesla community has some sort of freaking antiviral response to that thought. And I'm like, what the hell? Just isn't this the most obvious thing ever? You know? And then, of course, Omar, you know, and a bunch of people that I love were dunking on me having that thought. And of course, Robin, my girl, Robin Denholm, she came out and set the record straight. And of course, I had to dunk back.
No,
Obviously.
it's true. You do. Absolutely.
Obviously, you know? But it's just, it's, I really don't, I really think this is a very obvious thing that's going to happen. But it all hinges on supervised self-driving. That's what it all really hinges on. Unsupervised self-driving and the likelihood that regulation is going to be at a point where you can operate unsupervised self-driving cars in a lot of places in the United States or globally without a steering wheel and pedal that will help support a yearly capacity of at least 800,000 units per year, which is starting its ramp in the middle of next year. That seems like a lot has to happen very quickly for that to be the reality, because each one of those self-driving units without a steering wheel and pedal is going to replace like 3 to 5 cars on the road, because they never have to park and they never have to rest, right? They're in operation basically 24/7. And so for like the math, the amount of cars that it's going to replace and the capacity that Tesla has and the regulatory environment to me feels like a foregone conclusion that the line that's going to be making the Cybercab will be making cars with steering wheels and pedals. It's obvious. And what's surprising about this is I think the broader market is not expecting this from Tesla at all whatsoever. Like when I'm talking about the broader market, I mean like I'm not necessarily talking about Wall Street, but I'm talking about the population. I don't think they are really in their head, because if you really think about the last 24 months of what has happened with Tesla, it's gone through a gigantic smear campaign, some of it because of the rhetoric Elon had and the negative attention he brought onto himself, which then was brought onto Tesla, right? And so Tesla has gone from like being a, it's just an afterthought for most people. And then they're on the cusp of being like, yo, check out this car that starts at 30 grand or less that you don't even have to pay attention. It just takes you from point A to point B. That feels like a gigantic deal, you know?
Okay, let's talk about that. By the way, are we starting? Are we good?
We started like 3 minutes ago.
Okay, so I think what people don't understand is that Elon operates and manages in like almost as it's you probably wouldn't like this analogy, but like a Steve Jobs way, right? Where Steve Jobs would people would engineers would come to Steve Jobs reportedly all the time and go, you know, Steve, we can't really fit these chips into this small of a casing. You know, we can't really do what you're asking for here in the form factor that you need it to. And he'd be like, I don't care, get it done. And he'd be like, dude, like you can't do it. Like you physically can't do it. The engineers would be like, no. And Steve Jobs would reportedly like be that a-hole to be like, no, you're gonna do it. You're gonna get it done. I don't care. Even though I think if you did use any sort of logic, rationale, first principles physics thinking, you'd be like, how? It's not possible. But the way that he manages Elon is very similar, I look at it, to the way that Steve Jobs would in the past, where if Elon says, like, for example, FSD, he was asked at a few shareholder meetings ago about remote driving and the possibility of taking over his interventions. And he said, you know, prior to that, he said, like, no, we're not doing that. It's not going to happen. We're going to solve it, right? And he sets these gold posts for his engineers to be like, you don't have an out. You have to solve it. Because if you don't solve it, it's not going to work. You need to make this work. You can't really chase two chickens at one time. So if you're an engineer and you have this kind of out, you're not really going to be that creative thinker to be like, okay, how can we possibly get this done? If it's not a must, why would you, right? And so I think the Cybercab falls into the same type of conversation here, where if Elon were to say like, yeah, it's going to have wheels and it's gonna have a steering wheel and it's going to have pedals, like, by the way, I agree with you, it probably will. But if you were to just say like, yeah, no problem, that's what we're going to go for, like, why would you be pushing as an engineer for that full goalpost
Yeah.
goal of like, this is a full self-driving vehicle through and through? Regulation aside, I agree, like, they're probably gonna have to launch it with a steering wheel and pedals, but like, who cares? Like, well, I don't know why this is such a touchy topic with so many people. And I think it goes down to the root of people can't think independently sometimes, and people have to just take everything at face value. And so I think this is one of those things where Elon will say like, this is our goal, we're not going to do anything otherwise. Might end up being a little bit sideways from that. But the point is that he's pushing his team to get to the level that he knows that Cybercab needs to get to.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's beautifully stated, and we've seen this time and time again. It's the way he operates as a leader. It's that those that the package of the Cybercab, which is a vehicle that's designed to be fully autonomous and to have wireless charging and to engineered to have these butterfly doors that are optimized for driverless operation, so it's easy for people to get in and out, right? The shape of it, the packaging, the seating position. Yes, 1000%, that is a car that's designed to be autonomous from the get. But that car is also designed to have a steering wheel and pedal because they literally are driving that thing around to test it with a steering wheel and pedal. Okay. And I think that's the thing that's getting lost in this conversation with the people that are like losing their minds about this is like they have to do that anyway. The reason why steer by wire more than likely was put in the Cybertruck, number one, it makes for an amazing technology to experience. It allows you to have this awesome interface with the vehicle where you can really manipulate the ratio of steering so that you can have very quick steering on a very large vehicle. And then with rear wheel driving, you get an extremely nimble tank that feels like a cloud. It is an like I've owned mine since April of this year. It is easily the most fun car to drive on the road by far. I haven't driven a 458 Ferrari. I haven't driven a freaking Aventador. Let's set those aside and put them like, your P1s and all these, your Paganis and all that stuff. Okay. I'm sure that's like, you will feel like you're having an orgasm. Got it. But let's set those aside and let's go come back down to like, let's say most people land. It has a very interesting, very, very peculiar, very, very fun driving dynamic. But that steer-by-wire system on the steering wheel, what's the beautiful thing about it is that if you remove the steering wheel, the car can still steer because it's electronic. It's an electronic system. It's not a you don't have a column, and you don't have a thing that physically connects the wheels to the steering wheel that allows you to turn it with some power steering with like with an electrical system that makes it easier for you to turn the wheel. It's literally just 100% electronic. So what that means is that if you remove the steering wheel, you still have a system that steers. You still have a system that can steer the thing, right? So that of course, the foresight of that is like, okay, we will likely be in a scenario. This is back in 20, what, 19, when they were developing this vehicle. It's like we may very well be in a scenario where we will need to have vehicles with steering wheels. Even though there was solve for autonomy, because regulation may not be where it needs to be, even though we might be technically capable of executing a self-driving car. Okay. And so from that perspective, it's like, okay, Tesla has thought about this a long time ago, but Elon can't say that this is actually what's going to happen because it's going to massively eat into the Model 3. It's going to massively eat into the Model Y. And then people are just going to be
That's true.
sitting down waiting for this brand new vehicle that's going to be an unbelievable package that you don't have to pay attention to. Like what would be the reason to buy a Model 3? Well, and so that's why I think like the packaging of that drivable cyber cab or whatever we want to call this thing, like a cyber cab with steering wheel and pedal, the Model 2, whatever you want to call it, the packaging of that thing, I'm actually very interested in how much of a differentiation they're going to put in that vehicle versus a Model 3. You know, are they going to keep the two-seater configuration? Are they actually going to change the shape so that they can have a second row, like, you know, like a 2x2 Mini Cooper sort of type, you know, packaging, and then shorten the trunk and then maybe lengthen, you know, shorten the trunk relative to the, you know, to the rest of the vehicle, but maybe lengthen the car a little bit. But 80 to 90% of the parts is the Cybercab, right? Because that's what's actually going to allow you to ramp the lineup so that once regulation starts to catch up, you can start cranking those Cybercabs as much as you want, right? So the packaging of that vehicle is going to be very, very, very interesting. But the end result is going to be a potentially, more than likely, a sub $30,000 Tesla that Tesla is going to be able to manufacture in the millions of units per year where you don't have to pay attention. It will just happen to have a steering wheel and pedals.
And what's your timeline on launch for that, just to be clear?
I think so. I actually wrote a post about this on X yesterday. I think the timeline is going to go something like this. I think in the second quarter of next year, they're going to start building Cybercab. So Cybercab is going to be without steering wheel and pedal, like the actual the dream. I call Omar's dream. I call it Omar's dream. Okay,
Omar's electric.
Yeah, they are going to start building this because they have an allowance from the federal government to build 2,500 of them. And they could maybe build more. Who knows? Maybe they may remove that allowance. It's still going to be up to the states to decide if they can operate or not, because they have to get approvals for this thing, right, to actually operate as a self-driving car. So they'll start with that in the second quarter. And then for the rest of the year, they'll ramp that line with Cybercab so that they can build enough vehicles so they can start releasing into the wild. So I think 2026, we are going to see just Cybercabs. We're just going to see Cybercabs. But then in 2027, first quarter, most likely, they'll turn on the drivable version. Because by then, I don't, even if they get a lot of metros approved for the Cybercab to be in operation, I think that the demand, the available demand versus the relative manufacturing capacity is not going to be enough. Because by the end of the next year, they're probably going to be around somewhere between 2,000 to 5,000 Cybercabs per week of production. That's like 20,000 Cybercabs a month. Hmm. And then, again, you have to remember that each one of those Cybercabs can do the work of a regular car, which means that each Cybercab is really 3 to 5 regular cars because it doesn't need a driver. So their actual net capacity versus a drivable car, it's like 100,000 units per year potentially, and they'll reach that by the end of next year. And so the thought process becomes is like, okay, is the regulatory environment going to be at a point by the end of next year, literally 12 months from now, where there's going to be demand for 100,000 cars per year of this type of setup and ramping? And ramping really, because they're going to be in the middle of the S-curve by then. And so I find it very hard to believe that by that point, we'll have a regulatory environment where they can dump these vehicles anywhere. So by late next year, I think they come out with a drivable version, or they could surprise everybody. And then when they start the build-out for the actual Cybercab, in tandem, they'll do the Model 2, whatever we call this drivable version. And then they'll secure the demand so they can send the signal to the supply chain, to the suppliers that says, hey, we've secured it. We can order all these parts from you. We don't care. We'll start ordering all these parts. And then they can start running the lines. And they can maybe 1 out of 10 cars or 1 out of 20 cars is a Cybercab. And then the other 19 or 9 are the droppable versions. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. What do you think?
Well, so actually, on that note, so why do you think people are so attached to this idea that the Cybercab is just going to be fully steering wheel-less, pedal-less, and anything other than that is like blasphemy? Like, why are people so attached to this idea, this binary thinking on this?
Thank you to the sponsor of this podcast, Rebellionaire. Rebellionaire partners with Tesla investors who have at least $2 million in Tesla stock to reach their financial goals. Other investment firms might look at your Tesla position and think, wow, you have way too much. This is way too risky. But Rebellionaire actually embraces the long-term potential of a company like Tesla. They'll also look to maximize your profits by employing different tactics like selling covered calls, adding or trimming, etc. And the Rebellionaire team, which includes Bradford Ferguson and Matt Smith, they do this by spending a lot of time analyzing Tesla, the company in very novel and unique ways. They've done things like cross-country FSD trips, the self-driving suite that Tesla has. They've done a lot of novel research around the energy sector and the humanoid robot and AI sector as well. Make sure to go to rebellionaire.com/Farzad, rebellionaire.com/Farzad, and that's how they'll know that I sent you. Thank you very much. I mean, I think, you know, do you want the blunt? Do you want the blunt reason? Autism. No, I think what it is, honestly, we're splitting hairs on technicalities here. I really believe that's what it is. I think when I say Cybercat with steering wheels and pedals, it's generating a response from a subset of the community that's saying it's designed to not have steering wheels and pedals. And so therefore, if you add steering wheels and pedals, it's not a Cybercab. It's like, we're saying the same thing. Really, we're saying the same thing. But what's not being discussed, I think the piece that I'm trying to talk about that hasn't been discussed is that Tesla is building very large manufacturing capacity for a low-cost vehicle that people will be able to purchase and operate as a drivable vehicle that will be fully unsupervised. Nobody's talking about that. That's the piece that I'm trying to capture people's imagination with when I say the Cybercab is going to have a steering wheel and pedal. And then the reality of the situation is that that car will have a huge majority of parts shared with the Cybercab, if that's what we want to call that, you know, without the steering wheel pedal, the Cybercab and the Model 2, they're going to have a large percentage of the parts are going to be shared, and it's going to run on the same line, right?
Yeah.
So I think the reason why people are freaking out is it's just a very, it's a, well, I think it's a combination. I think Elon has been very good at messaging around the, we're not going to build more cars. This is the future. The future is autonomous, right? Elon is a master marketer. He's a master brand person, and especially to us, to the Tesla community, right? And so, but that's kind of like a brilliant sort of like veil and wall that they've built, because they can say the Cybercab is never going to have steering wheel and pedal, because the second it does, it's not the Cybercab. But we all know it's the same car.
Well, actually, right? So I've actually wondered this for a long time, where if you actually did the math on a robotaxi fleet and you just like high principles looked at this for a second, Tesla doesn't need to design a really cheap car for the robotaxi network. This car is going to be in the fleet for 5 to 10 to 15 years. You can amortize the cost, whether it's 25K or 75K. If you can premium up the value of the vehicle, of the experience, it's really doesn't matter. Like, why build a $25,000 car versus a 75? Build a 75, have an amazing experience. It's amortized over 15 years. The cost is peanuts compared to the amount of money, revenue that you would generate, and you would be top of the line, top tier robotaxi, comfortable at a 75K level. So the reason why Tesla, if you think about it, why would they want to build? If you're optimizing for speed, number one, you're trying to build a lower cost vehicle. But then what you're saying, I think, parlays into this where, and what if you're in tandem trying to build out the method to which you're going to launch your next version car together with this Cybercab? And so, because I look at it, I'm like, why doesn't Tesla just build a $200,000 car, $150,000 car, not Waymo-esque with all the equipment, but like decked out, like fully interior designed out, like premium top quality experience for like 80K, I don't know. And then that way, anyone that's ever wanting to ride an Uber, Lyft, Robotaxi, Waymo is like, why would I even bother with like this janky car, this insert legacy? Like, I'm just going to go with this amazing, like luxury level Tesla. Like, why don't I just do that? Like, you would eat up all the market because everyone would be like, it's the same cost, yet I get like almost like a limo-esque experience. Well, if Tesla's goal is, hey, we can optimize for speed at a lower cost car, at a 25K car. We can build way more of these than if we chose an $80,000 car. And we could, in tandem, set up the manufacturing process for the Model 2 or whatever you want to call it, line that we eventually will have to launch anyways as a low cost, because Cybercabs aren't going to, robotaxis aren't going to eat up the entire market share in terms of miles driven. People are going to want to drive still, especially in America. Well, then that's the only way I can explain both of those things.
I can tell you, so I 100% agree with that. But on the flip side too, the ultimate separator of Tesla versus everybody else is scale. Is the number of, like you said, it's faster. It's the number of units you can push through. And with the unbox process, what's the breakthrough with the unbox process? You can do as many cars as a regular process, but with half the footprint. So that means your unit per square foot doubles and your cost per square foot goes down in half. So from a first principles perspective, if you want to flood the market, you are in, you have every incentive to run as many cars as possible through the unbox process, steering wheel or not. It doesn't matter. You have revolutionized how you make cars. That's really the story that Tesla has been trying to sell with the unbox process. They have revolutionized how they are building cars. And so that means that the throughput from this line will be so large that if you don't have the corresponding demand to fulfill that insane capacity you've now built for this line, you're going to sit on a revolutionary line that is not having the throughput it needs to actually prove out its revolutionary method. So it's a transition to a new way of building. And so for that new way of building to actually work, you need the demand. And to rely on regulation to marry that demand makes no sense. It makes no sense, right?
Yeah. So on the unbox method, could they build, using that manufacturing method, a premium top-tier car instead of a cheaper, lower-cost, affordable car?
But it does, that's the wrong framing of it. Because if you build a premium car by default, you are bringing in complexity that's going to slow you down.
Yes, 100% you are.
Yeah.
But do you think as a differentiator, I get it. So this is like an interesting debate, right? Because Tesla's going with the scale method, and I think it's probably the right case. But I think let's explore like the, if you were the limo of robo taxis,
and you
didn't flood the market, because in theory you could say, okay, regulators might halt Tesla. There might be other ways that, you know, you're not going to be able to put 5 million cars in next year. Anyways, is there a world where there's a debate that should be had on being the limo of robo-taxis instead in certain markets?
That's a fantastic discussion. I think it all, from my perspective, the way I think about it, I think Tesla's entire thesis is to be the mass market vehicle for the technology. And so by default, if you want to make the mass market vehicle of the technology the most popular one, you have to optimize for throughput. And the way to optimize for throughput is by reducing complexity. And so if you reduce complexity by default, you're not going to be able to offer things like that.
Yeah.
But what does that do on the flip side? That now opens the market for other companies to come in and fulfill the limo.
Yeah.
The limo thing, right?
The limo.
So, and that's where like the Waymo conversation becomes a fascinating one. Because we know Waymo, if you look at the Waymo and then the Tesla solution, okay, I would argue the Model Y is a better car than the Jaguar I-Pace.
Model Y is one of the best cars, in the market.
100%. Just comfort, room, suspension, just
especially a new one.
Especially a new one. It's a phenomenal car, right? But there will be a market for these specialized solutions. There's going to be a market for your limos. There's going to be, you know, when you no longer have anything in a car that needs to pay attention, you could now have freaking a bed. You could have whatever. With enough safety and enough regulation catch up, we're going to go into an airline model. Exactly. Yep. It's going to be an airline model where it's like, you know, your Virgin has this value proposition. Your United has this value proposition. Your Spirit has this value proposition, right? And whatever. And then you start getting into your private planes. Then those are, and then you start getting, you know, you have two manufacturers really in you know, let's say the airline industry for not commercial purposes, like for any of us to go and catch a flight. You have Airbus and Boeing, but they don't give a shit about the inside. They care about the outside. I think that's in the next 5 to 10 years, that's where we're going to go. And I think Tesla's going to, from my perspective, I think Tesla's going to focus on the shells, and then there's and the technology to move these things from point A to point B. And then there's going to be third parties that come in and customize the interiors for each one of the value propositions.
Yeah.
And then every single one of those solutions that operate with a Tesla shell, the Tesla transportation unit, the only way you can run that is on the Tesla network, on the robotaxi network.
Yes.
That's what we're going long term.
Yeah, I definitely feel. I think that's the better way to do it too. But yes, I tend to agree, because like at that point, if you're a robotaxi operator, fleet operator, like let's say you bought 10 of these cars, you have to find a way to differentiate yourself. You can't just have, I just have 15, therefore like I get this percent of the market. There has to be a unique differentiator in the same way that you're talking about with airlines. So I think that is the way that this is headed. And then if you talk about partnership deals with other manufacturers on FSD, like that's another hot topic debate that's going on right now with other legacy auto manufacturers that are going to license FSD. It seems like we're trending towards not at the in the immediate term at least. But this conversation gets real nutty when you start talking about Tesla just skimming off the top margin off the software, and then developing this hardware and selling it at whatever cost they want to have because they're the only people that can build it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I think, it is fascinating how, in this entire FSD discussion, it's not just the software prowess that has separated them from everybody else, but it's the manufacturing as well. The manufacturing. The legacy automakers are have given up on electric vehicles, straight up.
I know.
They're just given
Like
up.
BrightDrop, recently. It's sad because look, when you can't make it work and you don't have any subsidies or any rebates or anything to fall back on your margin, as a business owner, you can't really fault them because they just don't have the
Yeah.
margin. If they don't have the margin, they don't have the expertise to
You
get the
can't do it.
margin. They're not going to be able to do it. Like it's just bottom line, not going to happen. But we are in a scary place where we talk about China tariffs and EV tariffs and potentially
Yeah.
that being lifted off. I hope we don't get to that point, but it's an interesting conversation.
Do you think we're getting there? I think we are.
As in, like Trump letting go of the EV tariffs on China? Don't think so. If that happens, that would be very unpopular, I think. And I think it, for the record, be the wrong move, like national defense wise as well.
So I flip-flop on this all the time because I think, if you think about the AI discussion in general, okay, I think there is an incentive for the United States to be able to sell chips into China, the sort of the NVIDIA chips, because they want to control the type of hardware that China is going to develop for the AI expertise, okay? But I think on the flip side, I think China's going to want something back. Because they know they're like, hey, we're giving you the ability to control our hardware supply for our AI products. So we're just at your thing. But on the flip side, you're gonna have to let us sell cars into your market.
So wait, repeat that for me. You're saying that U.S. Trump should
I'm
let
not saying should.
NVIDIA.
I'm not saying
Okay.
should.
Okay, wait. So repeat that one more time.
I think this is a very crazy theory, okay?
Okay.
But I really think, okay. So there has been this trend and discussion. I could be 100% wrong on this. This could be one of those of the many Farzad is losing his shit, and his brain's broken, which it happens all the time. But let's go through this, okay? So if you pay close attention to the AI discussions, there's been this prevailing theory that the United States and Jensen is pulling for this hard. The largest company in the world by market cap is pushing for this very hard, which is what we need to be able to sell into China our chips. Because what that's going to do, it's going to allow us to have supremacy from an AI perspective, because then we're not going to let China, our biggest competitor, to spend all this research and all this money in developing their own chips and potentially becoming better than us. So what
That's
we
not going
need
to
to
happen,
do,
but like
so
let's
walk me
just
through that. Walk me through
so
that.
that premise, I don't think is going to happen anyways. China doesn't have the infrastructure, they have the power, they have the capability, but in terms of tradecraft, Taiwan owns the semiconductor manufacturing. I don't think China, and there, I think I was listening to some experts on this too. They don't think that there's any way that China could get all the resources that they need for the semiconductors as well to even compete at that level. The only way I think people think China can compete is they could have inferior hardware, but they could be on the software and the algorithm side. And they could have algorithmic advances there in terms of AI. But I think by giving NVIDIA chips into China, I think that is just a fraught move altogether. Especially if you give them their best chips, then at that point, it's just kind of game over because they're already better, China is, in terms of human capital. And they can figure out to do the same with less. So if you give them better hardware, they're just going to get even better.
But China wants to claim Taiwan anyway. Right?
Well,
No, but seriously. But let's walk it through it this way. If you'd allow China to start buying NVIDIA chips, doesn't that remove the incentive for them to go into Taiwan?
I think what you said is right, that they want they think Taiwan is part of China anyways. I don't
Yeah.
think the chips changes that either way.
Okay.
At least maybe in the short term, maybe they're like, maybe Z will be like, yeah, whatever, hands off for now. But I think long term they still think Taiwan reunification, right? Like that's what they believe in.
Yeah.
So okay, but walk me through that second part. So you think, okay, so if NVIDIA is allowed to sell chips into China and they can then Trump will be like, okay, I'll let your EVs come in. Wait, how would that
Yes.
benefit?
Some
But how
something.
would But how would that benefit? Like, that would benefit NVIDIA. Like, how would that benefit the U.S. to allow chips being sold into
No,
China?
I'm not saying this is a good or bad thing. This is a thesis that I have that I'm like, I could see this potentially playing out. Because when I listen to a lot of these business, your All-Ins, your A16Zs, there's all these different platforms that you can listen to where you can listen to the people that are the builders in the United States, the people that have Trump's ear when it comes to this stuff. The tune that I'm hearing is, let us sell into China. Let us sell the chips into China. And so far, the whole thing has been, no, we're not going to let you. I think they just removed a condition for NVIDIA where they can now sell lower quality chips, let's say, what was it, like two generations ago or whatever. But I just can't help but feel that where this is going to lead to is that NVIDIA is going to be able to sell into China, and then China is going to be able to sell their cars into the United States. I don't know. Like, I don't know why. I honestly, this is one of those things where it's like, I'm at the gut feel level.
But like both of those things benefit China.
It benefits the United States because the United States becomes the sole provider of the infrastructure to power artificial intelligence.
But they could do that already today. Like, they could already do that if they wanted. The whole point is the U.S. doesn't want to do that. And so the U.S. wants to do anything to make sure that China doesn't get their hands on the best chip. So in my opinion, both those things are skewed towards pro-China. Like, those are great moves as China. None of those things come back in the U.S. What I think potentially...
Well, as long as the thesis around their algorithmic prowess is really better than the United States, truly, right? Like, their ability to build these models and these like neural net systems or whatever you want to call it, that layer that actually uses the chip to power the artificial intelligence, your assumption is that China is actually better. That's your assumption.
Look, I think it's a pretty good assumption considering that they don't have the chips today. They didn't have it for the last 5 years.
And they can make DeepSeek.
And they can do all the... And I think, like, for example, Huawei is also building chips in China. China has different ways that they can consolidate power to get all these chips made in a way that the U.S. can't, unless it's like by force. I think it's a real risk, China having the level of chips that you're talking about. I don't think there's any benefit. I think it's a negative benefit to North America if China were to get those chips. Like, you talk about money, probably, like, oh, revenue and NVIDIA is going to be beneficial. Yeah. I think that's a net negative for the U.S.
So what this implies is that Tesla's going to have a monopoly in the United States for transportation.
Okay, so the EV debate is where we can pivot to, because I actually do not agree. A lot of people in the comments will disagree, and you can let me know if you do, but I don't think that China should be allowed to sell EVs into the U.S. or Canada.
I want to be very clear. Hold on. Let me just make it very clear. I am not saying that I think this is good for the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
What I'm saying is, this is what I think is going to happen.
That's fair.
I could be wrong.
Yeah. That's fair. And people in Canada up here have also been calling for, get rid of these EV tariffs in China and let China flood the market. China subsidizes the crap out of their EVs, just at a national level. Not even talking about the level of tradecraft that's stolen and IP that's stolen from different manufacturers. But the subsidies, these car manufacturers will not be able to survive unless it's for the Chinese government subsidizing. And yes, I get it. All companies in China are partly owned by the government anyways, right? Communism. So I don't think so, because the other thing, and I've talked about this with you on the channel years and years ago, imagine if Apple was a Chinese company, right? You talk about the different national security risks that exist with phones and spying and spyware and apps and TikTok. And, if Apple was a Chinese company, right, and 2 billion iPhones around the world, or whatever the number is, were owned by the state government of China. You talk about national security risk. This is in 10 years, the conversation we're going to have with EVs. EVs can control where you go, where you have been, the and map humanoids. Records. And that parlays into that video of where you've been. It literally is like your phone on steroids for your life. And that's what actually I think to a small segment of people probably watching this freaks them out about EVs if they're anti-EV. But I think if China owns that part of your transportation, your phone, it's a phone on steroids. So if we talk about TikTok and the risk an app can face because of the Chinese government, think about the hardware of your car essentially being owned and being tracked and being monitored. I mean, I don't have to put two and two together. I think the national security risk is quite high. And that's why I think the tariffs exist, not because of anything else, to be honest.
I think that's a very accurate assessment. And this is actually something we talked about. I had Michael Dunn on the podcast. So he's this is the conclusion that we came to is that it's much more likely that there's a decoupling than a marriage between China and the United States, specifically because in the age of AI, these mm-hmm. products are massive national security risks. Massive self-driving EVs, human or robots, and whatever else. And so what that implies is that these countries are there and they're going to try to decouple not just those products, but the supply chains so that they can actually, so that, you know, like China hurts the US by, you know, if we talk about like there's no cooperation here, they hurt the US by ensuring that they aren't able to build a technology that's going to be better than theirs. Just okay. face value. So that when they go to the rest of the world and they try to compete like Europe will choose the Chinese stuff versus the American stuff, which they do a lot of times already.
Yeah, okay. They do.
You know, which is a... I don't want to turn this into that, but we'll go a different way. So if that's the truth, then each country is going to be reliant on their partner players or their domestic players to build the industry to have those things. And so... The United States and its allies, let's say, are then going to partner to figure out how to build electric vehicles that self-drive themselves. They're going to partner to build human or robots that are extremely smart, right? And so then the question becomes, who are the players in each one of those domestic markets that are going to win?
Yeah.
And so this is why this Tesla conversation is so fascinating. It's because if you analyze what they're doing, there is nobody else in the Western Hemisphere that's remotely close to what they're able to do, which implies that with enough time, unless we have startups or new companies that enter the fray, if Apple finally hires a CEO that wants to innovate a little bit, and they partner with somebody to actually make a legitimate, you know, competitor to Tesla, Tesla's going to eat the market.
So
they're just going to eat the market.
A couple of things. One is AI and what it's leading to with AGI. That's one conversation. But the one we're having now is our private markets that exist and the US government potentially looking at it and going, okay, well, how can we, you know, subsidize or accelerate or whatever? So we talk about cars, humanoid robots, those two things, for example. You know, is the US government really going to get involved with picking and choosing winners? And I guess they kind of have with Intel, and I hate the fact that they've done that, but
they totally are.
it's debatable. I don't like that, but maybe. Yeah. But I think what's really interesting here, and I will disagree with you a little bit, is the AI conversation, because we all know AI, and it's an arms race to AGI, right? China knows it. The US knows it. Every country knows it. They're the only two that have people that are actually on the path to AGI. I look at AGI in the same level that you kind of look at nuclear, right? You kind of have this mutual respect and you go, okay, well, look, we mutually mass destruction. You know, we have to come to a point, I think it will, where, okay, you're going to get to AGI or you're at AGI and I'm at AGI or I'm going to get to AGI, you're going to get to AGI. It's inevitable. Let's just have this mutual pact on AGI. And I think that has to happen because I look at AGI as like almost a nuclear kind of level, because it can build the nuclear, it can build the next nuclear. And so I think at that conversation level, I think AI and AGI, there will be a China and US agreement, maybe in the next 5-7 years, something like that, where they sit down, they go, look, you're 4 steps away, I'm 2 steps away, let's come together and develop some sort of agreement. I think it's going to happen.
I
think so. But on the private market side with cars and humanoid robots, I would like to think that still stays private and the free market lets us choose winners and losers in the market. Aside from, you know, edge case scenarios that we talk about with tariffs and stuff, but I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I think I agree with that. I think the trend of the United States treating artificial intelligence as that national security risk of at the level of nuclear technology, I think it's very obvious. I think nationalizing Intel is sort of that. It's like, hey, we need to secure as much compute capacity as possible so that we don't lose our ability, so that we don't lose the race to China. That's what it seems to me. And it's an extraordinary measure that the United States has taken to ensure that it doesn't lose the race.
Dude, you know, what's that saying that everyone has about, you know, you... Hold on, let me just, I, I actually just saw this recently. It was like basically like you like if you live so long, you turn out to be the villain yourself. You know,
Oh, yeah.
you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yeah.
That's kind of where with the US, I'm like, man, like that's communism. But I look at it and I'm gonna go, this nationalizing different private free markets, like that is not a positive step in my opinion. I get
Yeah.
that there's, and this is the whole debate with like, you know, democracy versus, other types of government is like, which one's more efficient? I don't know. But it is a step that I think that was and is too far. I still think so.
Well, yeah, I think from the standpoint of like if you're really a free market capitalist, you look at that and you're like, that is the craziest thing I've ever seen, you know? But then the counter argument to that is like, well, the United States has always kind of been a hybrid. It markets itself as one thing, but what it actually does is a little bit different, you know? It's like, hey, like, yeah, we're a country for freedom for all, equal, but slaves are okay. You know, it's like there's always been this new, and again, I'm not just that slavery is the worst thing on the planet. Okay, I'm not just I'm just saying like the culture of the country is very interesting, because you know we champion democracy like crazy, but then you look around, you're like, yeah, is that really like is gerrymandering really democracy, or are you just gaming the system for your own benefit, right? And gerrymandering is extremely common between, you know, is a two-party system really democracy? Or is it just, you know, each party knows the other needs to be the enemy so that each, you know, it's like, anyway, we can go down a crazy rabbit hole. But I think the overarching trend here though, Yashu, is that like AI is legit. AI is very, very legit. It's extremely legit. We were actually just talking about this an hour ago on our weekly call. Like my team was sat down and we talked through this. Think about the exponential nature of artificial intelligence from late 22 to now.
I know.
And then the thing that really blew my mind is there was a chart. I saw a chart last week or earlier this week. Did you know a majority of the content on the internet now is AI generated?
Well, the majority of the views I bet are not still, but
The
the
content,
content, yeah.
the units of content.
But there's so much AI slop out there. That's a whole different conversation. But yeah, I mean, I guess that's surprising. Like the fact that that's even true 3 years after ChatGPT 3.5 came out or 3 came out. Yeah, it is crazy the acceleration that we've seen. You know, so in 3 or more years, where are we? Right? That's the question.
Exactly. And then FSD is the same discussion, like version 12 to version 14. You know, from the first version of FSD to version 11, we had it wasn't it was r big changes, but there were kind of like step linear changes, you know, each kind of ver major version that came out. And then sort of the dot releases were like get small. But now with when to when When they went end-to-end neural net, all of a sudden from V1, 11 to 12, you had bam. And then each dot release was an even bigger step. And then 13, another big one. And then 14, another big one. And each dot release is like bigger and bigger. So, but that's AI. That's the power of artificial intelligence. And then the question becomes, what is the ceiling of improvement? What is the ceiling on the rate of improvement? And it doesn't feel like, you know, what's funny is like if you look at ChatGPT as an example, like is GPT-5 way better than GPT-4? Is it? Not for me.
I think it's better, but in ways that might not be recognizable to the average person using it. But I think the models and, if you do all those like different eval tests, it is better. But if you told the average person, I agree. Like the average person would be like, yeah, I guess it's maybe a little bit better. But like it wouldn't be like FSD level difference between FSD V11, V13 or something.
It's the things that we don't understand that it's better at. That the average human brain doesn't quite have a grasp on that it's better at. So the question becomes, when does that become value that humans can recognize? Where is the ROI on the incremental AI improvement for humans?
Well, so if you're if you here here's a weird if, thought experiment, right? Because 4.0, if anyone used ChatGPT 4.0, it would agree with you with everything. Like it would say like you're the smartest person in the world. Oh my God, what an amazing question you've asked. You're so thoughtful and
We got the
you
South
want to,
Park episode.
exactly, right? It would stroke your ego so hard. And then when people went to 5, they went, wait, it's not giving me that feedback. It sucks. 5 sucks. Like I wish I want 4.0 because I actually it made me feel better. And they weren't saying this explicitly, but like subtly they're like, no, I like 4.0, like give me 4.0. So much so that they had to actually give it as an option after ChatGPT-5 was released, because people are almost addicted to that level. So this brings up the subjective nature for the average person on what is better, right? Driving is an easy standard. You can have miles per intervention, miles per accident, blah, blah, blah. But when you have AI on subjective, and the whole reason AI is so powerful is because it can work on subjective tasks, right? 10 years ago, we could program things together to work on objective flows. Like that existed already. You know, if YouTube video is published, then send email with link. Like easy,
Yeah.
like good workflow. So AI introduces this subjectivity-ness to, okay, if Farzad releases an interesting video, which doesn't happen often, then email it out, right? Like, so now we get to the point where it's like, sorry.
Was so good.
So now we get to a point where like subjectivity is now quantifiable, right? And so, you know, I had this recent experience a couple of days ago. I used Google Gemini 2.5 Pro. It's not even the new model, which is coming out very soon. And it was harsh disagreeing with me, dude. I was like, no, like I think the way you've packaged this copy together is not accurate. It doesn't reflect it. Like, I want you to go back and like fix this, right? Like stuff I usually always yell at my little AI slave at all the time. And it goes back to me and goes, it starts swearing, okay? Because I gave it this video on YouTube and I said, like, transcribe this video or like summarize this video, and I'm gonna ask you a bunch of questions and interrogate you. And the person in the video is like quite the swearer. So then it comes back to me and it like uses his voice almost, and it's like swearing back at me. It's like, no, you're an idiot or whatever, like you don't know how this works, like this is how you're supposed to actually. I'm like, oh my God. I had this moment, I was like, I love this. I love the fact that it pushed back at me, because ChatGPT-5 would never do that to me. And it pushed back to me. It was like, no, you're wrong. And this is why. I'm like, oh my God, this is so great, you know? But I can imagine not every person that got that type of experience would be like, oh, this is amazing. They'd be like, wow, this is rude. I'm never using this thing again, right? But I think we're coming to a point now where like it's like the metacognition level of AI is going to get to a point where it's like talking, like me talking to you or something. And it's not there yet, but it's going to get to a point where like you can push back, I can push back, we can disagree, and it's like amicable, because and AI has stayed away from any sort of disagreements in the past. And I think now it's starting to get to a point where it will, and they'll probably optimize for too much disagreement before it gets back into the middle. But I think we're going to get to the point now where like people are going to start using AI in every single workflow that they use, no matter what they do.
I could, yeah, I think I agree, and that's just such a fascinating thing to think through. And I think it speaks to like, the truth-seeking nature of an AI is incredibly important. Okay, so the AI disagreeing with you is a manifestation of the AI thinking it has the truth, right? That's sort of the thing. And so if it actually has the truth, that is the most unbelievably powerful tool in the history of humanity, where you can go to a thing that will always tell you the truth. Because the truth is how you build things in reality. If you don't have the truth, you make a subjective world, like to your point, perfectly. Like the subjective world becomes objective, and then you can actually create actions against the what used to be a guessing game. It's now a much more quantifiable thing that we can generate results against. But the thing that is fascinating is like what percentage of humans actually want that. And is there, okay, so is it, okay, how am I going to word this? Because this is bringing up a like a sort of a thing in my head. We're going to have the fork. We're going to have a fork in humanity. We're going to have the people that want to live in the subjective world, and we have people that are going to want to live in the objective world. And then we're going to have a world for autism, and we're going to have a world for everybody else.
Well, there's gonna be people
Right?
that are gonna resist. Yeah, that's what you're saying. They're gonna be like,
Is that
I
the
don't want this.
no, not even resist. I think we're going to have a percentage of the population that will get lost in a fantasy world.
Oh yes, this is the clear existential risk, right? Because people will think like there's that AI
Is it
boyfriend.
existential though? I don't
There's
know.
like this AI boyfriend girlfriend subreddit that someone was telling me about yesterday. They're like, people think that they're like with this AI, like they think they're married to this AI. Is that what you're talking about? This fantasy world?
Whatever. Yeah, it's like people, yeah, people that like hearing confirmation bias. People that like being, people that want to feel a certain way versus actually saying this is what reality actually is. People that are able to absorb the truth and they're able to make decisions or actions off of the truth. That's what it feels like to me. We're gonna have a separation of the people that are able to do that versus the people that either are incapable of doing that or don't want to do that. And then we'll have something in the middle where they're going to like transition between one place to another any given day or any, you know, I want to hear the truth. Today, just tell me the truth. You know, mm-hmm. Am I ugly? Yes. You know, or whatever those questions are. And I guess In my head, I'm just trying to figure out, okay, what is that a, I don't even know why I'm thinking about it this way, but it just feels like it's important. It's like, okay, is a significant percentage of population do they want to live in fantasy land? Look, fantasy land, my definition is using an AI that just tells them what they want to hear, or use an AI that just makes them, like, reinforces their, let's say, their reality versus one that actually is rooted in reality.
Yeah.
You know? And how is that going to impact society? How is that going to impact who's going to build what? You know, is this going to be the fork where the people that don't want to live in reality, like the truth, is that going to be the matrix? Like, and I hate to take it this way, but is that going to be like the people that are just going to plug in? I'm just happy. Just let me be happy. And then we're going to have the people. Yeah, we're going to have the people on the other side, probably the minority, that are going to be like, okay, I want to use the truth to take my next step, whatever that is, self-improvement, building something. I don't know. So when I say this, is this crazy? Like, I don't even know.
No, I think it's just human nature, because people do this today, right? Like, people will only watch content that agrees with their viewpoint, because I think people come to a conclusion first and then they find supporting evidence later often.
Yeah.
And I think we're all guilty of it in different facets. We have a conclusion that is convenient to us, one that we know we want to reach to, and then we'll find supporting evidence sometimes to like fill that theory, and then you don't stress test it. And I think if you're watching this, I think like that's why it's important to call each other out on like stuff that we disagree with. That it's like, well, I actually might be wrong on this, and like this is why I think you are, and being open to that. But to bring this to Tesla, like, you know, a humanoid robot, it's important what LLM goes into a humanoid robot one day, because do you want that humanoid robot to be that fantasizing type that you're talking about, where it kind of agrees with you with everything and obeys your commands, and maybe it is? Or do you want that humanoid robot to fight back against you but washing the dishes, right? You probably don't want him or her or them or whatever to fight against you on your orders, right? So it's like the humanoid robot, we all probably both can agree, like, it needs to be obeying to whatever command you give it as a human, because you're superior than it. But there's going to be a percentage of people, and maybe some people listening in the comments, going, well, no, actually, the human robot is on the same level as me. There's no such thing as I'm better than that, which, you know, I'm quite humanist, so I think humans are above everyone else. But there's going to be some people that disagree and go, well, the robot is on the same level as human, so in theory, it should be able to disagree with what I say. So these are like philosophical questions that, like, are crazy to think about in today's world as we sit here in November of 2025. But in 2030, I bet you these questions are already like front page, that solved. Already had, yeah, so maybe not solved, but like had articles written on, you know, front page news with different case stories that have come out. It sounds wild to talk about right now, but I really don't think it is.
No, it's not wild at all. I mean, doesn't that imply that alignment is impossible then? Because each person is going to have their own version of alignment?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, but that's why I guess you just have a lot of different models and you can tweak. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, well, the alignment existential AI problem is one that I think, I don't know if we'll solve it. I think that the cat's already out of the bag. You know, AI is probably going to take over. So. I think Farzad's crying right now, by the way, if you're listening to our audio.
Well, no, my brain's like trying to figure out, like,
think about if you had a human robot, do you want it to be like a dumb dog, listen to everything you say, or do you want it to like push back and fight against you when you say something for it to do?
Where I stand right now, I want a human robot to be very good at doing exactly what I say all the time.
Okay. So we could both agree that that's probably not the same version that we would want for like a large language model for AI usage on ChatGPT.
100%. Right, because it doesn't exist in the physical world. Okay, so that's the separation, right? In the physical world, I wanted to do exactly what I wanted to do. This is a, I never, you know, this is a fascinating discussion. So I'm so glad you brought this up. In the physical world, I want something to do exactly what I want. Clean the dishes and nothing else.
Yes.
And then ask me questions on how to clean the dishes.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, and then it maybe it picks up this. It's like, do you want me to put this in the dishwasher? Oh, no, you can actually throw that out. I mistakenly put that in the kitchen, in the sink or whatever, because, you know, I was half asleep or something. Throw that one out. You don't have to put this in the dishwasher. Okay, cool. Got it. Right? But in the LLM, like, I want Grok to fucking lay it on me. Like,
Okay. Pause. What if now your kid is the one saying something stupid to the bot? Hey, like, go on, dad's iPad and buy me like $400,000 worth of Robux credits. Should it listen to your kid the same way that it
No,
listens to you?
because my kid,
But
because
how
my
does it
kid
know?
doesn't know what it's talking about.
But how does it know that?
Yeah. For sure. And this is why parental controls are so important. Right?
Right? But
But a lot of people are not going to do
think about this
that.
from like think about this from your from the humanoid perspective, because we're not that many years away from this. How does it know whose voice is who? How does it know one is a kid versus one is an
Well, the
adult?
voice should be pretty straightforward.
Okay, let's say that it gets that through. Let's say a kid comes over, doesn't have it programmed in. Now, how does it know if it's a kid? Maybe it's just a
It only
prepubescent.
acts on specific voices.
Okay, so you lock it to only this owner or that owner.
Correct.
Okay. So if someone else comes by, it won't actually do any reactions.
Get your own AI. Don't talk to my AI.
Okay, let's say
Yeah.
you have a medical emergency at home, God forbid, and someone else is there, a guest, it's not programmed in. Now it needs its help. Will it not be
Emergency
able to get up?
voices.
So what if the random guest that comes over? But you see where I'm going with this, right? There's so many edge cases that with Ruben or
Just let me die.
robots.
Fuck it.
Okay.
I'm kidding. No, these are phenomenal. So would it, you could jailbreak it, right? You could be like, oh, there's a medical emergency, right? It's like, oh, no, like, oh, only the AI will be smart enough to know when there's a medical emergency and somebody breaks into your house and they're like, they could be like, oh my God, call 911 and make me a sandwich. I don't know, like, whatever. Yeah, this is, yeah, dude.
Well, look,
Yeah.
I mean, Tesla, like Optimus is what, like 2 or 3 years away? Like, I don't know how many years until the house, but like, these are questions that are going to come up. I think you start with a lot of guardrails to begin with, and then you can loosen up later to the large language models. But
100%.
what people aren't talking about is these models are going to be different than the models that we're talking about. Like, they're going to have different guardrails, different evals. They're going to have different
Yeah.
edge case scenarios because they have in person, in real life consequences. But if anyone could solve it, it's the company that builds hardware for a living, builds manufacturing processes for a living in Tesla. Like, will XYZ company that's building humanoid robots that hasn't built more than 1,000 of them ever. Tesla builds millions of robots every year. They're called cars. Which one do you bet on solving this
Yeah.
problem, right? And the winner is clear, in our opinions on this.
Yeah, 100%. And I think too, like this entire discussion also says, like, which company would you trust to do these things more? One that's in the United States or one that's built by your
Yes.
competitor?
Yeah, abroad. Let's say in China,
Right?
with
And
different
that's
political incentives.
which again reinforces the thought that we are going to a segregated world. Not a well, I mean, we'll still trade, obviously, but when it comes to these core technologies, no way, no
Yeah,
way. Which then
maybe.
means that Nvidia probably doesn't sell them chips.
Yeah, I don't. Well, yeah. Will China come up with a way to manufacture their own semis to the same level? Probably not in the immediate future, but look, some of the smartest engineers and people in the world are of Chinese background. Like, in China, there's a lot of smart people. Now, there's different resource constraints and stuff that they're not going to get there with, I think, in the next 5 or 10 years, but maybe AGI solved by then. Who knows? So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Bro, it's getting crazy.
It
It's
is.
okay, last question, because I know you gotta go. Have we reached a singularity, or are we in it, or is that still a few years away?
Yeah. Well, I don't even think Ray Kurzweil would say we're in it yet. Would he?
I think he said 2030. 2028, 2030?
2028. But like, you know, I'm not sure if you feel like this way as well, but like back in like COVID days when we would be talking about Tesla, we'd go, okay, 2030. We would all kind of set this like arbitrary mark of like 2030. That's like the epic year. Like just wait until 2030, whole, you know, HODL until then. Now we look at the clock and go, okay, it's pretty much 2026 at this point. We're at 4 years away. If there's a new administration, it's at the end of this administration that we go, it's 2030, right? 2030 doesn't feel like a pie in the sky moment anymore. So
No.
the singularity conversation, whether it's 2028, 2030, 2032, where AGI essentially takes over the world and everyone can do anything that they want. And Elon actually said this actually a few weeks ago to bring him into this conversation. He said, by next year, AI will be able to do pretty much anything a human can do, you know, keyboard, mouse, video, that type of style. And then I think he said like a year or two later after that, it can do basically what the best human, superhuman level in any field, right? That's what a lot of people call AGI, right? The super or ASI or artificial super
Super
intelligence, right?
intelligence.
Right. And an AGI they call, well, if a human can do it, AGI can do it. That's or AI can do it, that's called AGI,
As good
right?
as a human.
Sure. As good as a human, but like not superhuman level.
Yeah.
We in a lot of facets, like ChatGPT 5, for example, you know, they tout this. They're at PhD level on they say almost every domain. They're at PhD level. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but they say that they're pretty much at that level. 3 years ago, I couldn't even get it to make a travel itinerary for me properly in a city. It would get stuff mixed up, right? So are we in the singularity? I think it'll be one of those things that is so fast, it comes so fast that it'll feel slow motion. And so that's why I think your question is actually really apt, because I think we are at the front stages of singularity right now, for sure. Will it be a 6-year process? Maybe. And then there'll be like 2 years of really fast progress in there, which is crazy to say considering the progress that we've already seen. But will we get FSD launched with robotaxis in every major city in the US in the next 5 years? I think so, easily. And scaled up to the millions of levels. That's epic. The fact that people won't have to drive anymore in 5 years if they don't want to, right? And they can do it at a cheaper than the Uber or the Lyft cost, right? With no driver in there. No
Cheaper than car ownership.
yeah, and people will still own cars. I know a lot of people don't think that they
100%.
will, but people will.
Yeah.
Will we get a PhD level in every and superhuman level in every single facet, any single domain, any single niche in 5 years if it's not already here already? I think so.
Yeah.
Will we get manufacturing gains, medical gains, cancer research gains in the next 5 years from AI, AGI, ASI, whatever you want to call it? I think we've already had a few big breakthroughs, not novel breakthroughs, but using the existing technology or existing medical research. I think we're going to get that in the next 5 years. If you can't call all of that the singularity, I don't know what else you would call it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think those are the ones, only the ones that we're thinking about, right? What are going to be all the new ones that are going to come down the pike that we didn't even think were solvable? Dude, it's just, I can't believe it. Like, it just, it's like, but again, like, and I know you got to go, but like, I could talk to you about this for another 10 hours. Like, I still feel like we're going to go through a pretty violent transition.
It will be
I mean, the
violent.
transition's gonna get, it's gonna get very, very, very weird.
Look, there's going to be one person employee companies that are $1 billion valuation, right? Every single mega cap out there is going to go, well, we don't need this many people. And we're already seeing that with restructuring. So that's a lot of job in inequality and you know, if you want to call it hardship, it is.
Yeah.
People will go, okay, well, I can do way more with way less. Not even I can do more with the same. I can do way more with way less. Okay. You
Yeah.
kind of get screwed on both sides. And so you talk about transition of technology. It's going to be painful. I agree. And it is painful, actually. In fact, if people are listening to this in the comments, they probably agree with this already. It has been painful. You
Yeah.
know, the economy is crap too. So, that, you know, there's that. But is it going to get much worse before it gets better? Unfortunately, I think so.
I
I
think so
think
too.
in this transitionary time, I think our standard of living will go up though. I think our well-being in general will go up. I think technology rate's going to go up. But I think at the same time, paradoxically, it's going to be a more difficult time for more people. And
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a learning curve if you're young enough, hopefully, and you can be young at heart, doesn't matter biological age, to adopt these sort of technologies, not
Yeah.
resist them. There's a lot of people that I know resist AI. They go, it's all slop. AI sucks. you could fight it till the cows come home, but you should adopt it, you should use it, you should learn from it, because it's going to happen whether you're here or not. And you should use it as a leverage point into your career, into your personal development, into your personal growth. And these conversations in 10 years might be superfluous anyways, because bots do everything for us. Cars drive us everywhere. Maybe there's some sort of universal basic income conversation at that point.
There has to be.
Maybe there is. But don't bank on it. Don't consider that as like your way out. So I think it's beautiful because I can, you know, I'm an idiot, but I can learn about this niche, that topic, this research paper. I throw it in. I can ask a question. I might not be perfect at it. But I'm like, wait a second. It's actually dumbing it down to a point where like even I can understand it, which is insane. So I think the biggest thing, we talked about parenting before this, that I'm looking at is like, okay, what's important for a kid, for me? I'm like, curiosity. If kids are curious, if people are curious, everything else kind of falls in line because you're just generally excited about learning. But the moment I find myself getting a little bit resistance to new tech or like jaded about this, that's where you start to see a lot of halting of progress, I think.
100%. I couldn't agree more. I think the UBI thing is going to be inevitable because it's going to be a response to the violent nature of the transition, by the way, FYI.
Yeah. You
know, we've printed money. Yeah, we've printed money for way, way, way less critical things. And boy, is Jerome's going to have his hands full here.
He's so proud. I'm sure it'll be like Cash Patel or someone, the head of the...
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I could imagine. With this administration, anything's fucking possible. My God.
Cash, he's got cash in his name, you know. Works out.
I didn't even think about that. Oh, my God. Yasha, where can people find you, dude?
Wherever they want. I don't know if you're seeking to find me, you probably have problems, but go on Twitter or X at Hey It's Yashu, on YouTube at Hit That Bid.
Make sure you go check him out. Yashu's the best. Thank you, brother.
All right, great combo. See you guys.